I felt invisible. I didn't know I would feel that way. But walking into my first class of a doctoral program in political science at a Big Ten research university, it was as if ice-cold water had been thrown in my face. There, among a sea of men, sat just a small handful of women. And that's when I knew I'd be different. Before stepping into that class, I had no idea that political science was so male-dominated. Being raised by a strong career woman in the wake of the feminist movement of the 1960s and 70s, I grew up believing women could do anything men could do. And so I went into the program without even thinking about the gender breakdown. To me, it was obvious that women were just as capable as men of being political scientists. Over the course of my time there, I came to discover, always just by chance, that many of my male colleagues formed study groups to help each other prepare for exams, that they played pickup basketball with male professors, that they were invited to dinner at professors' homes, that they were encouraged to participate in academic conferences, and the evidence of the old or young boys' club went on and on. I remember the profound disbelief, disappointment, and yes, anger I felt each time I learned about the advantages that my male colleagues enjoyed. I wasn't just excluded from these advantages, they were hidden from me. I came to see and feel the Department of Political Science as foreign territory. I was so very clearly an outsider. Now, I could have been defeated by the situation, and I honestly thought about quitting almost every day. But I couldn't get over the injustice of it. Why, I asked myself, would women be any less capable than men of studying and eventually teaching about politics? It became my mission to prove to myself, to my colleagues, to my professors, and to my future students that politics is not just a male domain. Well, I made it out of graduate school, and yet 20 years later, I am the only woman in my department and the only woman who has ever gotten tenure in political science at my university. Perhaps my personal experience of navigating my way through an oppressive environment for years makes me so drawn to and fascinated by the history of the women's rights movement. In our Unitarian Universalist tradition of advocating for social justice, it should be no surprise that several leading white women's rights activists from the 19th century were Unitarian, including Olympia Brown, Susan B. Anthony, Margaret Fuller, Judith Sargent Murray, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Lucy Stone, as well as African-American Frances Watkins Harper. You'll hear some of those voices as we continue together. It is incredible to me that some of the issues women's rights activists fought for in the 19th century are still with us today. In thinking back on my own story, I was reminded of a statement in the 1848 Seneca Falls Declaration, which launched the modern women's rights movement in the United States. It said, "Man has endeavored, in every way that he could, to destroy woman's confidence in her own powers, to lessen her self-respect, and to make her willing to lead a dependent and abject life." On the one hand, we've come so far from where women were in the mid-19th century that there's really no comparison, one might say. And yet, on the other hand, I and many other women still face the issues we presented earlier in 250 years of struggle. As we talk about the heroines of women's rights, one thing we need to acknowledge is that Anthony, Stanton, and others ended up not championing the rights of all people. For example, they argued against giving black men the right to vote before white women. And it's important that our reading of history reflects that reality. We, on the other hand, can follow their example of fierce advocacy while setting our goals much higher, elevating the human rights of every race and class. The fight for the vote took 72 years, From 1848, when the Seneca Falls Convention demanded the vote for women, until the 19th Amendment to the Constitution came into force in 1920. The activists I've mentioned and hundreds more fought tirelessly for their rights throughout their adult lives. And yet they didn't see their most radical goal, women's right to vote, come to fruition. Yes, there were important victories along the way. White women's entrance into some colleges and some professions, new laws to give white married women property rights, and voting rights in a few Western states. And yet the big prize, a constitutional amendment making women's suffrage the law of the land, came 14 years after Susan B. Anthony died. So I had to ask myself, in relation to the theme of perseverance, how does one persevere in the face of defeat? What made it possible for Anthony to declare, shortly before her death, failure is impossible? How did she and other activists persevere while experiencing the fierce opposition that came from virtually all corners of male-dominated society? Failure is impossible. To believe this would be the ultimate motivation to always persevere. But when I first read this and realizing it was coming from Anthony, who died before she saw her goal achieved, I thought it was an overstatement. Of course, failure is possible. We fail all the time. So it must come down to how we understand failure and, by extension, success. Is it failure not to achieve your immediate, if it is failure not to achieve your immediate goal, then did Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Lucy Stone, Sojourner Truth, and many others fail? In the context of my own story and the much larger and more profound story of the women's rights activists of the past, I find that when we face adversity, oppression, and many other challenges life throws at us, we can find the motivation to persevere when we live according to our core values. When we become clear and focused on how we want to live our lives, perseverance becomes easier, regardless of the immediate outcome. The ability to persevere through adversity in the face of oppression requires holding fast to our most central and basic beliefs. For me, this was my desire to prove to the world that politics is not only for men, and that women can understand the political world and offer insights that are unique. Former slave, abolitionist, and suffragist Sojourner Truth expressed this sentiment about working for the truth. She said, "I feel safe in the midst of my enemies, for the truth is all powerful and will prevail." We can never know for sure whether our efforts will come to fruition. But when we know that what we are doing is right for ourselves, for our family, for our community, for the world, then we are more likely to be able to persevere. Unitarian author Louisa May Alcott expressed this so well. "Far away there in the sunshine are my highest aspirations. I may not reach them, but I can look up and see their beauty, believe in them, and try to follow where they lead." The women's rights activists of the past and of today stand as beacons of hope that change can and does happen. But they are equally inspiring, not just for what they accomplished, but for their commitment to persevering in the face of great obstacles, knowing they were on the right side of history. This sentiment of giving over your life to your truest principles is repeated often in the words of the suffragists. White suffragist leader Carrie Chapman Catt reminded us that service to a just cause rewards the worker with more real happiness and satisfaction than any other venture of life. Anthony spoke of the connection between her faith and her activism. She said, "I pray every single second of my life, not on my knees, but with my work. My prayer is to lift women to equality with men. Work and worship are one with me. And Stanton wrote, the moment we begin to fear the opinions of others and hesitate to tell the truth that is in us and are silent when we should speak, the divine floods of light and life no longer flow into our souls. Finally, Stone reflected on the simplicity of doing the right thing for our principles. She said, I never doubted that equal rights was the right direction. Most reforms, most problems are complicated. But to me, there is nothing complicated about ordinary equality. I believe that these women's uncompromising convictions allowed them to persevere through setbacks and failures. Although I wasn't anchored in Unitarian Universalism when I was a graduate student, having grown up in a family that embraced social justice and community engagement, I felt a profound sense of responsibility. At the time, that meant succeeding in a male-dominated field in order to show very simply that women are as capable as men. The reason I was so drawn to Unitarian Universalism later in life is because it reflects my deepest values. In particular, I am drawn to our first and second principles of the inherent worth and dignity of every person and justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Those two principles help to guide how I live my life and allow me to persevere through the ups and downs of many aspects of my life. From how I parent, to what kind of friend or daughter I am, to the what topics I focus on as a teacher, to the volunteer work I choose to do, and to how I interact with people on a daily basis. So I throw out the challenge to all of us to ask ourselves if and how we are living our principles. Are we doing what we know is right in our private individual lives and in how we engage the world? Elizabeth Cady Stanton said that truth is the only safe ground to stand upon. Let us pursue our truth and hold fast to our guiding UU principles of love, compassion, reason, justice, and equality. That is what will sustain us through adversity. That is what will allow us to persevere. That's when failure is impossible.